I'm calling this meeting to order. This is the second portion of the Matanuska-Susitna Borough School District School Board meeting. We have already done our special recognition and the flag salute. So, Member Welton, do we have a quorum?
We have a quorum with all members present.
Who has the board goals tonight? Mr. Michelson, will you read the board goals?
Sure. Number one, we will improve the student's success, achievement, and performance by focusing on their career and college readiness. Goal number two, we will increase the graduation rate. Goal number three, our schools will welcome families and community members in the education of our youth. And finally, goal number four, we will create and maintain a safe and healthy environment for our students and staff.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Michelson. We will, can I have someone move the agenda?
I move to approve the agenda.
Second that.
It's been moved and seconded. Are there any objections? The agenda is moved. Persons to be heard on non-agenda items. Madam Clerk, will you read the rules?
When I last looked, there was no one signed up.
All right. Is there anyone who would like to come before the board and speak on non-agenda items? We have two sections in our meeting where people are invited to come speak on non-agenda items.
I can read the rules.
I don't believe anybody wants to come forward and speak. All right. Remember, you have a second time during this meeting that you can come forward and speak.
Do you want me to still?
No, let's wait for the second portion. All right. Let's move to administrative reports. Dr. Prama.
Thank you, Madam President. At this time, our first administrative report is some guests here from Apple to give one of our schools the Apple Distinguished School Award. So please come forward.
Well, I'm very excited to be here. My name is Pete Brasper. I'm with Apple and here to present Matsu Central with the Apple Distinguished School Award. It's part of our education recognition program, and we're so pleased to be able to recognize Matsu Central this evening. Just to give you a little bit of information about the program, we have two portions of it. There are the programs, which are schools that may have a one-to-one in different grade levels, and then there are schools that typically have one-to-ones throughout, and that's where Matsu Central is. And there, it's a K-20 program. School-wide, 24/7 access is what our schools that we recognize typically have. There are fewer than 240 of these programs and schools nationwide in the United States in 2012 and 2013, and there is currently only one in Alaska, and that's Matsu Central. We look at this program based on five practices, best practices that we see schools participating in. Number one is visionary leadership. We like to see innovative learning and teaching, and I brought up with us our program coordinator, Kathleen Ferenz, is here. Give a wave, Kathleen. And she was able to go out and see the school today, and she said just wonderful things about it, especially about the innovative teaching and learning. Ongoing professional learning. We know that these programs can't succeed without really great professional development. Compelling evidence of success. I think one of the things that you can see at Matsu Central is enrollment has gone up dramatically in the last few years. And a very flexible learning environment. It's something I think that Matsu Central epitomizes, is that flexible learning environment. And I wanted to share just a few of the reviewer comments. I nominated the school, and then some of my colleagues reviewed the application. And these were some of the things that were said about Matsu Central. John Brown's vision for supporting students from a massive area with widely diverse needs is impressive. Parents are actively involved in governance and on outreach to adult learners is outstanding. From the area of ongoing professional learning, beyond the normal teacher-led PD and informal PD discussions, I love that students are brought into the mix to provide new insights. And you saw that in the video, how the kids are involved in the learning, how they relate to technology. It's a learning moment more schools need to adopt. And then in the flexible learning environment area, the spaces at Matsu Central are clearly designed to allow for maximum student learning, and they've embraced the full ecosystem, leveraging Apple TV for collaboration. It's impressive that that Matsu Central helps parents and families set up home networks and parental controls. And the final comment was that it's impressively rising to the challenge of serving a diverse learning community in a remote part of the U.S. So very positive comments from our reviewers for Matsu Central's application. So we're here to present them with the Apple Distinguished School Award and congratulate you. And at this point, I think we'd like to bring John Brown up, and Ryan will bring our award. John, bring anybody else you want up. Yes, clap. Absolutely.
I'll be brief. I know we have 5 minutes, but I do want to say I really want to kind of reflect on a conversation I had yesterday when Ollie came to the school and visited. We talked a lot about the future of education and the needs of the students that we're serving right now. And an award like this, it honors much more than the school. It really honors the culture of our district. I'd really like to thank Justin Michaud, who's been so supportive in making this happen. For us, this particular solution, it works for our school, it works for our kids, and it's exciting to work in a district and live in a community that really values and embraces innovation. And I just want to thank Dr. Prama for just leading that charge and for this board. I mean, you guys have been so supportive in what's best for kids, and that our decisions ultimately are always driven by that. I thank you. I'm proud of my school. I'm proud to be working in this district and working for this board and Dr. Prama. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Madam President, and thank you and congratulations, Matsu Central School. The next administrative report was a request for a follow-up by the board, and it is on the Alaska Middle College School. And if our program administrator for not only APEX, our online learning, as well as the Middle College to keep things rolling, is Kathy Moffitt. And with her, she brought four Matsu School District students and four UAA college students simultaneously. So I will turn it over to Kathy once she gets that rolling. You can turn on the mic, Mrs. Moffitt.
Thank you.
Be ready.
Hi, I'm Kathy Moffitt, and I am delighted to be here to again present on Alaska Middle College School. We were here a little while ago, and I know that there are more questions. We hope that after tonight's presentation, some of those or all of those questions will be answered. AMCS is the newest school in Matsu Borough School District. It is housed in Eagle River at the Chugiak Eagle River campus, an extension of UAA. AMCS operates as a partnership with UAA. It's a side-by-side partnership. It's not one is above the other or vice versa. It's side-by-side. Our students become very proficient in navigating between the two sides, knowing our expectations and protocol, also knowing UAA's expectations and protocol. There are differences. For example, our calendars are different. Another difference is in the way that we monitor grades. On our side, we look at grades, we monitor, we encourage students. On the UAA side, they expect them to kind of step up and be responsible and be a monitor of their own grades. And they may not, I mean, we don't know what they're doing until the end. They know because they mastered the Blackboard system, I think. This school would not exist without this partnership. This year we doubled in size. With the increase in students, we've had to be very explicit about expectations. This is a very lovely building, and it houses several businesses. So our students are expected to behave in a professional manner. To help with this on the UAA side, they've hired a monitor to help with the activities and monitor what goes on the second floor. On our side, we've extended a counseling position that was part-time to a full-time teacher counselor. Our counselor and her role ensures that our students are ready to graduate from high school. She also will help facilitate scholarship goals that they might have and make sure that those requirements are met. On the university side, they have an academic advisor, and she will meet with each of them to talk about requirements for different degrees and help them select the college courses that would best meet their academic goals. Truly, this is a school of choice. To help articulate that, I want to share a video clip with you.
This partnership between Mat-Su Rural School District and the University of Alaska Anchorage provides this first middle college in the state located here in Eagle River. So for juniors and seniors who live in Mat-Su Valley, this then provides a brand new option for them to complete their education through the establishment of the school. For students who are college ready, what that means is that they can attend the school and they can expect to have an opportunity to complete up to a 2-year Associate of Arts degree while attending the school. And for students who are not college ready but are working towards that goal, they receive high school instruction from 2 highly qualified Mat-Su Borough School District teachers.
You know, one of the things about the program, of course, is that the students who come into it are all volunteers. They've had to affirmatively choose to come here. So we start with a population where the students have already taken a certain amount of responsibility for their own education. And they certainly come in with a willingness to learn. They have a variety of skills, and they're at a variety of levels, both high-end and low-end. That said, as they all come in with a similar unifying attitude of willingness to learn. And as long as they have that, then we can pretty much go anywhere.
We take every junior and senior who has their junior standing, at least, and they have a desire to raise their expectations of their own ability, of their own work, to earn those college credits, and to take on more. In fact, some of our students are the best proponents of this, and they've been saying things like, at this school, the expectations are higher, the teachers are pushing me to do better, and we really appreciate that everybody who's here is here by choice. Everybody wants to learn, and they really notice that in contrast to the schools they've come from.
The Alaska Middle College is an opportunity for kids to get dual credit, of course, on site, which is, we do a lot of tech prep in our schools, but this was kind of that on-site model, that wow of, I can really do it. It was a way for us to learn about university, and I think that post-secondary and K-12 need to talk more, and our relationships with UA in particular have been phenomenal. But we're, as much as we're offering an opportunity for our kids who are in the program, we're also offering an opportunity for us to learn about how to prepare kids for the next level.
Thank you. AMCS will never have a sports team or a marching band, but we want our students to have the opportunity to experience typical high school activities. What you see is a screenshot of the stickers that we have, and they are placed on the Wolf cards issued from UAA. This is to help facilitate that participation. In addition, we have bulletin boards on campus for each of the sites so that sports schedules and different events can be posted. Students select their activity school. Some may have gone to Mat-Su Central, but maybe for their activity school they want Wasilla. So they can select their activity school and participate in sports, dances, and other school-related activities. This year, AMCS will have its first commencement ceremony with the class of 2014. This is a request that the students wanted. And we also recognize that many of those students feel very connected to their school of origin. So they graduate from our school, but they may also participate in the commencement activity at their school of origin as well. Tonight, we brought four students. I'm pretty excited to introduce them to you. And they're going to share a little bit about why this was their school of choice for their junior and senior year, or just senior year, and a little bit about their experience. I'd like to start with Nick Colstead. Nick is the first to earn an Associate's of Arts degree from the University of Alaska. So here's Nick.
My name is Nicholas Colstead. I am a senior at the Alaska Middle College this year. I'm 17 years old. I will be turning 18 next week, actually. The reason I chose the Alaska Middle College was because I've always had a goal to do the best that I can in everything I do. So I was at Colony for 2 years, and then I realized that the Middle College was opening up. And I heard about it on the radio and through other people and stuff. And I was like, all right, well, that sounds like a good idea. I really want to go to college. You know, the high school just doesn't quite provide the same curriculum that you can get in a college. So I took advantage of it. I went to the middle college the first year it was open, and I loved it. It was pretty much the best school I've ever been in. It offered classes I could take that actually challenged me for once. So, I mean, that was one of the best things I liked about the middle college is the entire curriculum. All the classes are hard. They're challenging. They really cause you to think. Like, you know, most regular high school classes don't really have that level of understanding of the content you get with the college classes. I went to Colony for 2 years, and I played sports and everything, and the other schools have been very accommodating to Alaska Middle College needs for activities, dances, football games, you know, stuff like that. And one of the best things I got out of the middle college, other than the curriculum being strong, was the support from the administration. What I liked about it was the administration listens to what the kids want. They don't exactly run it how they want it. I mean, they have a certain level of authority, but they really like to listen to what the kids want and do their best to make sure that they get everything that they need to succeed. After the middle college, I just received my Associate's of Art degree in about a month. And then I'm going to Oregon State. I'm going to pursue a career in civil engineering. Thank you.
Thank you, Nick. I would like to introduce Brandon Williams. This is Brandon's second year at AMCS. So, Brandon.
Good evening, everyone. My name is Brandon Williams. Again, this is my second year at the Alaska Middle College School. The reason I chose the Alaska Middle College School was to accelerate my learning. Since elementary school, I've been trying to find a school that would provide a challenge for me. I've always been accelerated in my learning. My first 2 years of high school, I simultaneously took online courses at BYU in order to accelerate myself. Ever since enrolling in the middle college, I've been qualified for all UAA courses, and I will be receiving my associate's degree next semester. I'm the first in my family to receive a degree, so this is a big step for everyone at my house. It's a challenge, but I believe it's something worth working for. At the middle college, it's taught me certain soft skills that no normal high school will be able to teach you. Time management, study skills. While, of course, regular high schools can teach us, a college does the job just as well, if not better. After graduating high school at the end of this semester, I will be heading to Mat-Su College to receive the remainder of my credits for my associate's degree, which will hopefully make me competitive enough to receive an appointment in one of the four Federal Service Academies I've applied to. Thank you.
Thank you, Brandon. Next, I'd like to introduce to you Marilee Kincaid, her first year at AMCS.
Hello, my name is Marilee Kincaid, and I'm a senior at the Alaska Middle College. The reason for choosing the Alaska Middle College was because I came from homeschool. I've been homeschooled my whole life, and I was a little intimidated about college classes without having the in-class experience. And so I took up this opportunity, and the teachers have been incredible on the high school side and the college side. They have pushed me and shown me that if I put my mind to it, I can succeed and I can do great things. My parents did not attain their college degree, but three of my older siblings have, and I'm excited to follow in their footsteps and hopefully attain a college degree. And my future hopes are to attend UAA and get a degree towards counseling or therapy to work with children who have experienced trauma and help them experience healing. Thank you for this opportunity. It has been a blessing and is still a blessing in my life.
Thank you, Marilee. I'd like to introduce to you Hannah Clark. This is Hannah's first year at AMCS as well.
Hi, my name is Hannah Clark, and I'm a junior this year. My home school was Wasilla High, and I found that the atmosphere there wasn't really pushing me or pushing the academic abilities that I knew for myself, and so I heard about the Alaska Middle College, and my reason for choosing this was knowing that they created a professional atmosphere for kids, and I wanted to get a head start on earning college credits sooner, and I feel my greatest impact there so far has been being in the college classes and knowing that I can do this on my own and without anyone having to guide me along the steps or telling me what to do. And so I really gained that confidence. And some of my future dreams and goals are to start my own business and be involved with the government. And later on down the road, I would like to start an organization to help fund kids in need of kids who can't afford, who don't have the money for schooling. Thank you for this opportunity.
Thank you, Hannah. Again, Dr. Paramo and the school board and the administration, on behalf of these students and the others, we thank you. Thank you, thank you for this opportunity at this amazing school.
Are there any school board members who'd like to ask questions or make comment?
No, I don't think so. Okay. Thank you so much. Thanks for coming.
We're going to move on to borough and city reports. Palmer, okay, we'll start with you gentlemen choose who's starting.
Bert Cottle, City of Wasilla. Madam President, Dr. Paramo, board members, I have four items tonight. The first one is to remind everybody that this weekend that we have a gun show going on at the Bernard Center. That'll be on Saturday and Sunday. Also, this year's New Year's, and I repeat, New Year's Eve's fireworks will be at 8 p.m., and that'll be over to Adita Park, and that lasts about 20 minutes. And Christmas friendship dinner, again, will be at the Menard Center on December 25th. Last year, we fed right around 3,400 people. That's open to anybody, and if you would like to volunteer, you can call. And finally, the homeless count that we've done for the last 4 years will be on January 29th at the Menard Center also, if we'd like to volunteer. And last year we had just over 40 different agencies there for the homeless count. Thank you.
All right. Palmer, Mr. Doug Griffin.
Thank you, Madam President, members of the school board, Superintendent Paramo, Doug Griffin, city manager, City of Palmer. Well, we've had some visitors at City Hall from one, your second grade class. Yesterday, Mayor Johnson hosted 25 second graders in Kim Evans' class. And I guess they're going through some kind of a government learning thing. I'm sure the mayor was very good. I wasn't able to meet with them, but the mayor was a great host. And tomorrow she is attending three other second grade classes at Swanson Elementary School to talk about government. So looking at your website, it looks like maybe second graders are looking at government, different branches of government this time of year. Anyway, that was a great pleasure for us to be able to, I know the mayor enjoyed interacting with the young people from Swanson. Our big event coming up, of course, next week is Colony Christmas, starting on December 13th. It's gotten bigger, and we're hoping for not too cold weather and favorable winds so that we can shoot the fireworks. They had to get postponed last year because of the high winds. But I know the chamber there is transportation available. We've kind of grown from the edges of our downtown, so we are providing transportation to get people around to the different venues, all the way from Arctic Avenue down to the Key Bank Plaza and all points in between. So we invite you and your families to participate in Colony Christmas, a great tradition here in Palmer. Another thing that we hope to become a tradition is the farmers market that's basically started up here on Mondays. I don't know exactly the hours. Monday afternoon is you can always get in there and probably look for a couple hours after work. Mondays were available at the depot, and so that seems like we've gone from we can transition from Friday flings to Monday markets here at the depot, so that you can still get some locally grown vegetables that can last for a few months into the winter. So we invite you to participate and shop at the market at the depot every Monday throughout the winter. And then finally, the City of Palmer, we're almost done with our budget. We're on a calendar fiscal year. We have got one little thing, forgot how we're going to, any changes we might make in managing the airport, but I think everything else has pretty well been resolved by the City Council, and we have to pass the budget next Tuesday, the 10th of December, and I think we're on track to do that. So thank you very much for your attention. Merry Christmas if I don't see you before then.
Thank you. Why don't we move on to Ms. Williams, the Student Advisory Board update?
The Student Advisory Board has not had a meeting since last school board meeting, but our students are continuing to work on their committee work. Thank you.
All right, Dr. Paramo for the superintendent update.
Thank you, Madam President. As scheduled, we do have a budget update and then a bond project update to be presented this evening. But I wanted to take time before that to just provide some information. As you know, since our last board meeting, we did have a terrible weather day in the district. And I just want to share some information as there's currently a weather watch in effect right now for freezing rain. And so we are watching that, and our folks are keeping an eye. But I wanted to let folks know that the process is when we do have a weather alert, we both First Student and our staff begin to track the weather on radar and satellite vapor maps. And we did have those logged and checked from 12 a.m. to 2:50, 3:50, all the way up to 6:30 a.m. And at that time, the ice was stuck behind Chugach Mountains. As we know now, the weather hit us hard. We did deliver through 187 buses, all secondary students, to school on time that day. And the weather hit us in between the elementary and secondary routes. The decision was made due to the late coming of that rain. When parents send their kids to bus stops, many of them leave home. And had it been older kids, I look back, I might have had the older kids would realize, boy, my bus isn't coming, I should go home. Our youngers sometimes will stand there because they obey, and they will stand on that route. And we did not want the kids to stand outside in the freezing rain, and so we proceeded with the buses. All the accidents did happen. We had three bus accidents One was on Edlin, which was a terrible accident that we were thankful that all students were safe and everyone was okay. The other two buses were other motor vehicles hit them, as well as just buses were couldn't pass on the road, so we just had them stay put. And we did learn about some communication improvements that must be made, and we are working on those. But I wanted to go on record to say that it is a very decisive and deliberate process. There were many comments that we want to have school because we get more money, or we want to have school, just lots of things. And really, it did come down to student safety. I'm happy to know that all students were safe, but I'd like our community to know that it is done with care. We're starting now, and we are watching and may not have school on those ice days. But the timing of this was not good for getting our fleet off the roads. So I wanted to share that, and we did publish that as well on our website. And in addition, later on this evening, you are going to see a budget adjustment to take some action on some budget adjustments. And I spoke about this last board meeting, and essentially it is good news. Last year when we were doing a budget revision, it was because we had too few students. And so this year, I'm happy to report that we have additional students. Last year, we did make our projection, squeaked in. But our problem was that our state has an actual excellent funding mechanism where they really try to fund additional monies to small learning communities because it is more expensive. And this probably is in acknowledgement of our entire state that the majority of schools are actually in small communities. And so MATSU and Kenai are two districts which really have large comprehensive schools as well as very small community schools. We have a school of 21 in Berryossa, and we have a school of under 50 in Glacier View. So we have some small schools. And last year, when we set student enrollment at these schools, and it's lower because students, the multipliers for students at small schools are greater, and so you actually receive more revenue. So when those students weren't in those schools, they were in larger schools, we had to adjust. This year, we adjusted the other way because we had not only more students, but more students in categories which had multipliers. And so you will see a PowerPoint later on that demonstrates an additional approximately $6.5 million in addition through revenue that's coming to our district through student enrollment. And we did have 162.5 FTE, because that's how it's calculated, not by bodies, but by FTE. Our total enrollment is 17,479.5 FTE, and that equates to about 17,800 students for the students that take part day, things like that. Of those 162 additional students, 63 of them were intensive needs students, which carries a multiplier of times 13 for the revenue of the state. And with that, the district thus far, and the board has approved, we have 50 additional FTE working for us than when you left last spring and adopted the budget in June. 31 of those positions, or a little over 31 you'll find, are in certified positions, and the other 20 in classified. The majority of the additions were placed in those areas for which students needed to be served, which were in special services classrooms. And you'll receive the detail on that, but in my report, I just wanted you to know that that is an uphill, a good look into the future. The 50 FTE did not encompass the entire additional funds. We do know that with additional classrooms, additional purchases of materials and things like that had to happen as well. We also did provide all schools with additional discretionary money. That's a state code of account. But what discretionary money is used for is books and material, purchase services, things like that. So each individual school, all 45, received additional funds. And those were the funds that when we needed to make up a declining budget, we took from those funds. And so we had an adjustment made this year, as well as followed the board's
desire in making sure our classrooms are staffed appropriately through the metrics. And so we continued to use the metrics with the new students that were here and staffed our buildings appropriately. And I'm just glad that that is where we're going, and it looks like continue to grow. We'll look at about 100 more students next year. So thank you. With that, I'd like to invite our folks from the borough to come up, and Mr. Fulp for our bond project review. This is our December bond project update.
Thank you, Dr. Promo, President Powger, members of the school board. I just want to introduce Jeff Walden, project manager at the borough. Again, I want to remind folks that the schedule that we're on is just a monthly update, comprehensive update of all bond projects related to the 2011 bond package. So without further delay, Jeff Walden.
Good evening, Madam President, Dr. Promo, and school board members. I'm Jeff Walden from the Matsu Borough. For your monthly construction update. I'd like to start tonight by first thanking the multiple people and departments in the school district that we deal with on a daily basis. We deal with everybody ranging from the custodian staff to maintenance to the educational professionals. And I got to say that it's always a positive experience, so I just want to make sure and let you guys know that. Last month, I briefed projects that were completed over 2012 and 13. From this point forward, I'm going to stick to the projects that are ongoing right now. And I'll start with an overview of all of the 2013 projects, just kind of a list, and then I'll talk about the projects that are funded and ongoing right now and the upcoming projects with the future bond sales. The first three in green are basically complete, so I won't talk about them too much tonight. That's the fire alarm system upgrades, the physical educational improvements, which the school district administered themselves, and the athletic field complexes at the four high schools. The rest of these I'll talk about individually as I go through my briefing tonight. And this is a continuation of the 2013 bond package. I'll start tonight with Valley Pathways. So far, construction is on schedule. No problems. It's been going great. The city water, I know, was an issue, and it's in progress. It's on hold due to weather, but it's not a critical path item, so there won't be any issues there. This school replaces 12 portables and will be open for 2014 school year. I'd also like to point out that this is the borough's first experience administering art contracts. And so far, it's been very challenging, but we're winning the battle. So there will be five art contracts involved at this school. Matsu Day School is also on schedule, and it is also involved 3 1% for art contracts. Kurtek High School Addition, you recently saw the 35% design. We're approximately 50% now, and this project is on schedule for 2014 start, 2015 occupy. Joe Reddington Senior Middle School High School is being designed by Wolf Architecture. We're approximately 70% designed. It is currently advertised right now for a construction contract. This is the borough's first time going to GCCM contract, and our goal there is to get a contractor on board early in the stage, because there's a lot of work to be done at this site, and it's a large school, and we want to be ready for the 2015 school year. So hopefully December 11th we have good participation, and then we'll go into the evaluation process, which can take up to a month. Denali Elementary School, this was recently awarded to Bettisworth North. Our design meeting started November of this year. And this is a very aggressive schedule in this school. It's 44,000 square feet. I know there's hopes of August 2015, and that right now that's what we're shooting for. But like I said, it's in a very aggressive construction schedule at this time. Iditarod Elementary, this is a replacement school. The bonds have not been sold for this yet. We expect to have that money available March, April of this year. So we're going to go ahead and advertise it in January, February. So we're ready once those bonds are sold. we can award a design contract and get that school in design. Additional funded projects that are smaller, so didn't dedicate a slide to each one. I'm trying to keep this briefing where it's not 30 slides and trying to keep it somewhat medium presentation. So if there's anything on here that you feel I've missed or if you need more information, feel free to contact me or Luke, and I'll include it in the next presentation or send you an email. Big Lake Elementary renovation is in progress. It is scheduled to be complete January 2014. So the next meeting, I'll either be here begging for forgiveness or telling you it is complete. Same with Palmer High. Actually, Palmer High mechanical upgrades, that construction contract, expect to be awarded next month with that work starting during the next spring break and summer. Houston Palmer locker replacement, that's another project that will be complete by January. I'll be begging your forgiveness. It's a fairly simple project, so expect no issues there. Backup generators, it's a district-wide project. That was already advertised for design. I expect the design contract to be approved December 17th of this month. Flooring replacement district-wide, expect that to get installed summer of 2014. Trapper Creek Elementary roof, expect that this summer. I'll point out that the Trapper Creek Elementary roof is not the 2013 bond, but the previous bond, which I believe is 2011 bond. And Willow Elementary School roof, we're expecting to install this summer, and that is a legislative grant-funded project. Upcoming projects. When I say upcoming projects, these projects are all dependent upon bonds being sold in March, April. I don't see any issues there, so we're anticipating that. And all of these projects will be advertised January, February. And these projects include restroom renovations and wash basins, and that's a district-wide project. I believe it's about 10 schools. ADA upgrades district-wide. Some additional athletic field improvements district-wide. Energy upgrades district-wide. HVAC upgrades district-wide. And Houston High School exterior upgrades. The larger projects, some of these we're selling the design and construction administration fees in March, and then the smaller project was selling everything. So the large projects will either be designed, and then the smaller projects will be designed and constructed by the end of next summer. And that concludes my briefing. If you have any questions, I'll take them.
Member Rutherford.
I do. The first, I'm just curious, why is it the first time the borough has administered 1% for art? All our schools have had that.
In the past, the school district had administered the art contracts, and basically they ended up using, I'm ballparking here, but about $25,000 of their own money to hire an art curator, and we ended up hanging art after the school was built. So talking to the school district, the wishes were to get the art up front so we can install it in the schools as being built. So, and the art curator that was hired in the past has retired, so we took it upon ourselves to see if we can get this going and install it in the school while it's being constructed.
And then my second question is about the community meeting out at Kinnick, and you told us at a joint committee how it went, but I just want to reiterate, because I think it was so important to engage that community, answer their questions, their concerns, their fears, keep them in the loop so that there's no simmering misinformation. So in your opinion, how did that community meeting go?
I wasn't there myself, but my boss, Mike Brown, was. And from what I gather out of Mike is that it went really well, and it stayed positive, and that the majority of the questions were surrounded around access and road improvements, which are included in the bond that was recently sold. So as far as the school itself, I don't think there's too many questions. There were some questions about, what kids go to which school, which we don't speak for. So, but overall, it was a pretty positive experience.
All right, Member Larson.
I just want to reiterate how much I appreciate this update when you come in monthly. It really helps us out a lot. I appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Go ahead, Dr. Promo.
Madam President, that concludes the superintendent's report.
All right. That moves us down to the consent agenda.
I'll move the consent agenda, the minutes of November 20th, 2013, the special meeting. Item B is minutes November 20th, regular meeting. Item C, 14-044, recommendation for certified new hires. And item D, 14-045, recommendation for rehire of retired teachers.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded. Is there any objection to passing this item? Seeing no objection, this item is passed. Takes us down to action item A.
I move action item A, 14-035, Matsu Central School, new course approvals. There are five new courses for Matsu Central School.
I second it.
It's been moved and seconded. Is there any member of the public who would like to speak on this item? Do we have an administrative report?
Madam President, the school is here, as well as our curriculum folks, if there's any questions.
All right. Is there any questions from the board? All right. Seeing no questions from the board, we're on to discussion. Anyone have any comment on these? Member Larson.
Well, I do appreciate the additional information that came through, and I understand the mix-up that occurred, not getting the information. And I also had a long talk with Mr. Brown about the overall curriculum, and I appreciate the input totally. Thank you.
All right. Seeing no other comment on this. Is there any objection to passing this action item? Seeing no objection, those new courses are passed. Takes us to item B.
I move B 14-046, legislative priorities.
I'll second that.
All right, it's been moved and seconded. Is there any member of the public who would like to speak on our legislative priorities? All right, Dr. Paramo for an administrative report.
Thank you, Madam President. As you know, each year our school board, through the Alaska Association of School Boards as well as the Superintendents Association, and then we also go down there on our own, to talk with our delegation in Juneau for support for education. And in that discussion, we speak to the board's goals and objectives, as well as to their legislative priorities. The priorities are really divided into two sections, education funding as well as education programming. The education programming is also a request for funds, but it's actually a request for specific funds to continue innovation in Matsu School District. One of the presentations you heard this evening was on the Alaska Middle College. That startup money was funded by a legislative grant. Our iTech school, which provides online learning, the 1,700 courses that we have, that was also provided by a legislative education program funding. So I'll just kind of do a brief review of these to let you know what it means, and we can certainly open it up then for any questions. On the education funding, the first thing, of course, is the manner in which we are funded, which you may have heard is the base student allocation, which is the formula funding. An increase in the formula funding is requested. Also, the formula funding provides for career and technical education, a multiplier for that, and Matsu Borough School District is suggesting adding a technology funding factor as well. Also, We had a report this evening, actually an award given to Matsu Central School. They are a highlighted school in our district. They have over 1,500 students. However, you saw that students were in the building. They do take classes at the building, but it's really a blended type learning. We only receive 0.8, 80 cents on the dollar for every dollar given for a homeschool student, because our homeschool students move in and out of homeschool, neighborhood schools, online learning. We really have an open system. We're going to ask that all students be funded at the 1.01 FTE level. If the legislature does not, through the governor, doesn't come out in the governor's budget to increase the BSA or the base student allocation with a multiplier, we will need additional one-time money to come to our district to continue our programs. And last year we received one-time monies for safety, and we received one-time monies for energy. Our district already expends funds for safety and energy, so what we were able to do is to replace those funds, and then that those funds were used to retain staff in our buildings. We will need to continue one-time funding, and this year, knowing that the biggest cost driver to all, and basically it was a consensus of the superintendents that the a cost driver in our districts, especially the large five, it's the single increase. In others, it's energy and insurance. We are asking for one-time money to assist in the funding of health insurance increase costs. In addition, the energy money remains. Once again, if multi-year funding is not an option, school districts need tools for which to retain teachers to teach the classes for which students need to take. And large school districts like ours, to do a reduction in force for tenured teachers, there's two provisions. And one is that your base basic need decreases, and in a district like ours, it wouldn't, just because of the increase in inflation, things like that. So that can't happen with us. It's mathematically almost impossible unless we lose half our students. The other thing is to lose enrollment, and we are a growing district, and you need to lose your enrollment by 3%, and that would be difficult for us to do. When we provide contracts to all tenured teachers, we want that. We want to retain all of our teachers, but we retain contracts to all tenured teachers without deliberately knowing what classes we really need, because that happens in March, and there's a different deadline later on. So what we would like is to be sure to review every certification for every class needed, and that is the provisions for the RIF, and that's what that entails. And it's if a school is having a foreign language, you want the teacher of the foreign language that the students request to be the foreign language. That's just one example. It could be English. We have too many English teachers. We need more science teachers. But if we don't look at the certifications and only tenure, then we could be off in certifications. We have had staff, though, since our last RIF, which is pretty it's been a good move. Many of our staff, knowing, especially in large high schools, they've become dual certified so that they can fit into master schedules. So much of this sometimes takes care of itself, but that still remains a challenge if we were to have a reduction in force. This year, as you know, we increased in staffing, which was definitely more pleasant. Change in intensive count. Our student support services spends hours and hours, weeks and weeks and months to provide information on our intensive student count, which always remains slightly under 2%. We would, rather than having districts do have higher staffing to do the paperwork, we would rather have our staffing working with children. And so if there was a provision for 2% of any population would be students of intensive needs, which would receive that multiplier, that would be most sufficient. In addition, this would avoid last year. I just want to have you recall, school ended last year May 21st, and our confirmation of our final intensive count audit was presented to us May 19th. So our school year was finished when we received the funds. which is when we received confirmation that we were going to get those funds. So that, and when we don't have a large fund balance, that makes it difficult. So for future planning. The education program areas, we want to continue the Alaska Native Science and Engineering program that we have. We've had reports on that. It's in its second year for a two-year request for the second and third year. The National Math and Science Initiative is also a continuation, and that really just builds the capacity in teachers and provides top quality content area, which on a survey of Alaska teachers done by NEA Alaska was a request for professional development in content areas. And this provides professional development in language arts, mathematics, and science in their content area. Preschool programs, we want to continue our preschool program for a one-year request to continue the successful programs we have. Blended learning middle school model, this is a new education programming. We do know that students who disengage with school, it doesn't happen their senior year, and then we call them a dropout or they didn't graduate. We know that it happens early on. Sometimes it is due to the learning struggles of a student. Sometimes it's just due to circumstances at home. We want to provide an environment that will challenge students, motivate them to continue their education, and to be on target for high school, because if they are successful their ninth grade year, we keep kids. And so this is a new blended learning model for technology, and we would locate this at the new Valley Pathways School. Creating community responsive schools. This is part of our Capturing Kids' Hearts, part of our customer service, taking care of each other, taking care of staff members, improving the capacity of our leadership to be better leaders in their schools. It is also working with the community needs, and one of those in there that we've learned over time and done some professional development is that students in our district, because of an industry that was brought here or that was actually resided here but has grown, is the correctional industry. And 1,400 new prisoners have arrived, and the data demonstrate that half of the prisoners have children that are school age, from 5 to 18. Not all of them go to MATSU, but with that capacity, we wanted to build our skills in servicing families with incarcerated spouses or children with incarcerated parents to have them be successful. The goal is to not continue the cycle. And then finally, Young Inventors Organization. This is truly just a startup monies. It is such as Science Olympiad started in a school. We know that one of our schools that does well in Science Olympiad every year is Teeland. And they win state ever since they started, and they go to nationals every year. And it's just it started with building the capacity early on, and the classes revolve around that and the electives. We've had a new idea presented to us, and it's developed by kids, for kids. It's called Young Inventors Competition, and we would love for our legislature to give us the startup money that we can broaden those skills in kids to really demonstrate their learning in outside of the classroom. And these are an encapsulation of the education programming, as well as the education funding flat out in statute. And this will follow with individual requests of capital improvement projects from every school. And we have placed those together, and those are developed by the school, and we will provide those as well. But these would be the board ideas, and they obviously it's a draft, but it was put together through feedback of students, staff, teachers, and board members. Thank you.
All right, so are there any questions for Dr. Paramo? Member Rutherford.
What's the procedure for the individual capital improvement projects that the schools submit, and what's the timeline on that?
The information went out to schools in October. To discuss and look for improvements that they would request. And then they turned them in to us. And if they were appropriate, you know, some things we know that don't really qualify for capital improvement, so we had to call the schools and take those off. But once they're requested and appropriate, we take them on the form, and then we actually have to enter them on the CAPSA system, which is from Juneau. And we do have confirmation that all of those projects will run through the school district this year and not the borough. And so really it's a request by the principals. Many of the principals work with their PTOs to come up with requests. We've also placed requests on there that items that could not be bonded for, we put those on the capital requests as well. And we did that as a district. One of those is the ice hockey rink up in Sioux Valley. That was a non-allowable item on the bond project at 7030, and so we took it upon ourselves to place it in a capital request to demonstrate that we do support that building of that hockey rink.
Go ahead, Member Rutherford.
So last year I had a concern. I understand the autonomy of the charter schools and that a certain amount of that is dictated, but last year it was my understanding that we did a little bit of vetting of those requests from the schools by administration. We looked at, is the number even realistic for what they're trying to get for that number? Is it appropriate, like you said, and all that? And on the charter school requests, at least I was told that we didn't do a thing to them. They came as is, were in the book as is. And most of them were fine, but it seemed to me that we ought to do a little bit of vetting, even of theirs, not to step on toes, but because there was such a disparity in what was requested. Some schools asking for 10,000 and some schools asking for 5 million. They're still part of our district, and we still need to be able to answer questions as to do we think that's a realistic number for what they want. And so I'm just wondering where the direction came from to not do any vetting of their requests, and do we have an option of working with them a little more than we did in the past?
Go ahead. Through the president, we... On the ones that the schools had requested that administration supervises, many of the requests, just so you know, were items that would be inappropriate to request that we take care of. And it was like, well, if you need that, we'll just take care of that for you. As far as the charter schools, the manner in which the supervision is set up is we supervise the people individually, such through Alaska statute. They belong to the collective bargaining unit. Principals belong to theirs. And we supervise directly the behavioral actions of principals. But the charter schools actually hire the principals. And their APC boards govern their actions. And so administration, for me to remove something, is inappropriate. However, the board... Their APC board is governed also under your board, just not under administration. Does that make sense? This year, however, in light of your concern as well, those schools requesting building funds did provide, and they're actually pretty comprehensive, they provided building renderings. They provided additional information of location, what would be done. So it wasn't just a number with a paragraph. It's pretty detailed. A few of them had actual architectural drawings already done and paid for out of their funding. And so we're trying to get it to be more deliberate and detailed and assist them with what it should look like. But for me to take it out, the governance of charter schools doesn't allow that specifically.
Are there any other questions from the board? Member Walton.
Under the educational funding, requesting the increase in the formula funding, I have not heard exactly how that will be received by our legislators. Some other people have heard. I don't know exactly. I do know that in the past it's been don't even ask because it'll just offend us. Is that still the kind of climate that we're in or not? I mean, I noted from the AASB meetings that districts were going to ask and then we're not going to hold back. So I just am curious as how you think that will be, how that will go across. I mean, it's just a question of speculation. Thank you.
I have talked with probably half of our legislators, and they have indicated that they don't want to touch the formula funding. That doesn't mean we shouldn't ask. And so it is in our request, and it will stay in our request, unless there is a big move to take it out. But it will stay in our request. We need to ask for that. We need some kind of ongoing funding. It's very difficult to hire teachers with one-time funding. So that will stay in our request. It may not be received very well, and we may not choose to hammer on it, but it will stay in our request.
Thank you.
Member Larson.
Yeah, just to add on to that, what I learned down the AASB also, in talking to legislators, it's their creation, and they don't like it. So, you know, that's the way we get our funding, and to leave it in there and then be offended of it is kind of an oxymoron, I guess, because that's how they fund the schools. And they're, yeah, until they come up with a different method of doing it, I think it's a must that we need to continue to ask, although, like you said, it's not welcome, but it's there, a method of funding schools.
All right. Are there any other questions?
I do have a question, Susan.
Go ahead, Ms. Michelson.
You know, just kind of curious about under educational programming, it looks like 1 through 3 are existing programs that we're continuing to ask for funding. And then you've got items 4, 5, and 6, which appear to be new. I just kind of wondered how, when we consider these things annually, is it part of a long-term plan that we have, or is it, I noticed that there's a 2-year plan, a 1-year plan for these. Is that part of like an overall type of long-range plan, or would they expect us to come back in 2 years to ask again for another 2 years kind of a thing? And I don't quite know the history on how this all operates, but just curious.
Dr. Palma?
Yes, through the president. Some of these are one-time costs for, you know, staff development, things like that, and we discuss that it's a 2-year process for the program. The ones that are like Alaska Middle College and the online learning, we requested funds for over 2 years, and as we grow, so we've purchased the infrastructure to start the online learning, you know, the cyber centers, the computers that needed, and then the curriculum, and as we grow, and we have more students, then we just incorporate those into our process. So the Alaska Middle College, we were this is a great example. We could not start the college with more than 50 kids last year because we couldn't turn over more than 50 kids into the university system each year. So the staffing that occurred the first year we had 45 kids was a classified, you know, a paraprofessional, and then 2 teachers to handle the school side. And so we needed that startup money for those 45 kids. But as we move on and add staffing or add students, we doubled the school but didn't double the staffing. And so in 3 years and 4 years, as we add kids, more kids to the school, it's going to pay for itself. So there is a plan for that to be independently paid for. And the goal was to start new programs and be innovative without taking away our core programs and programs that we know work. And so some of the requests are one time, the Young Inventors Organization. Once we get that going and those investments, that'll take care of itself. Others have 2-year requests. The one that is simply year to year is the preschool, because that's there is discussion at the state level that should preschools be considered in our average daily membership. Right now they are not. So we, only for special services, so we educate about 500 preschool students, and only a certain amount of them count in our ADM. The rest you know, they come to our doors every day, but they don't count. We don't receive funds for them, and so they're funded, five preschools are funded outside of that formula. Now, if they were to stop funding the preschool, we would have to stop funding, we would stop having preschools. Not all preschools, but these, the preschools that were funded by this program, which are general education preschools in partnership with Head Start, are preschools for which students come to school and receive assistance and support. Those would remain because that's part of IDEA. It's just the general education preschools.
Right. Okay.
All right. Any other questions? Any other discussion? All right. Is there any objection to moving the legislative priorities forward? Seeing no objection, the legislative priorities are moved forward. We're on item C.
I move item 14-047, Birch Tree Charter School Calendar Revisions.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded. Is there anyone in the audience tonight who would like to speak on this subject? Do we need an administrative report? All right. Is there any discussion? I think this is pretty self-explanatory. Is there anybody, any board member who objects to passing Birch Tree Charter School calendar revisions? Seeing no objection, this also passes. I'm asking that we take a short 5-minute break before we move on with the rest of the meeting. We're on break now for, actually, Mr. Larson, you're giving me a look. Let's do a 10-minute break. We'll be back at just about 7:30. Thank you. All right, we've moved down to item D.
I move item 14-048, bid protest number B14-02, snow and ice removal and sanding.
Second.
All right, it's been moved and seconded. Is there a member of the public who would like to come speak on this item?
My name is Dawn Jones. So when do I start? Okay. In response to the Manuskas-Susitna Borough School District's notice of determination, I'd like to submit the following response specifically addressing the following arguments. The school district has acknowledged that DNS was not sent addendum number 2, which was required to be sent under the terms stated in addendum number 1. That is by mail or fax. Under these circumstances, it would be impossible for DNS Road Services to know the content of and substance of addendum number 2. With regard to the addendum availability via the website, we had every right to rely on the terms of addendum number 1 and wouldn't look anywhere else for additional addendum. Statement number 2 relates to the specific items in addendum number 2. Our argument is not that addendum number 2 is inconsequential to our bid, but rather that these items are specifically answered within the bid document itself. The mere fact that we have protested the 2 notices of determination, have appeared at now 2 board meetings, and have been in contact with the school district before, during the bid process, demonstrates our strong and continuing interest in the school snow removal contracts. The notice of determination states that DNS Road Services had the responsibility to notify the district that, despite its failure to attend the mandatory pre-bid conference, it was still intending to submit a bid. Had it done so, DNS would have been sent addendum number 2. This is not correct. Bill Stearns contacted Patty Krause in the afternoon of 10/2/13, the day prior to the bid due date, and drafted his request for a waiver of mandatory pre-bid site visit. The school district could have sent via fax Addendum number 2, at any time up to 2 p.m. the next day. I don't know if you have any questions or you can ask, but that's what I have to say.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
Is there any other member of the public who would like to speak on this?
My name is Bill Stearns. I own DNS Road Services, and I thank you for the opportunity to make another presentation on this issue. I know you folks have lots of things on your agenda, and I appreciate the time that you're taking to hear us out. This is my position on Mr. Fulp's non-responsive determination on this issue. Following the vote on November 6th by this board that the pre-bid requirement be waived, our bid was opened the following morning in the district purchasing offices. It was noted that acknowledgement of number 2 was missing. In addition to that, on Jesse, attendance at that meeting was Jesse Strobel, my office manager, Don Jones, who just testified before you folks, and I drove to from Talkeetna to Palmer to witness our bid opening. When our bid was presented at the meeting, it had already been opened. I was concerned to see that in a sealed bid process, our bid had been opened prior to this scheduled bid opening. I have provided each of you with a notarized affidavit from our office manager that states that our bid envelope was opened prior to November 7th bid opening. If our bid is considered non-responsive as a result of the failure of the purchasing department to send addendum number 2 as required by the bid process, I'm requesting that this board declare the bid for Sioux Valley, Talkeetna, Trapper Creek School, snow plowing, be rebid due to the compromising nature of a pre-opened sealed bid. For the record, and at the request of Mr. John Phillips of the Maintenance Department, we have been performing snow plowing services this season at Trapper Creek and Talkeetna Elementary Schools, as well as Sioux Valley Junior Senior High School. And for the record, our bid is the lowest bid that was submitted. Thank you.
John Stefanski. Born 1959, Commonwealth of Massachusetts. You guys heard the same story last time I was here. Right in the contract says it's a bidder's sole responsibility to ascertain that they received all addendums issued by the purchasing department. Addendum will be issued by both fax and U.S. mail. All addendum must be acknowledged in the space provided and then returned with a bid or bid will be deemed non-responsive. That's why I stuck to the story about you can't waiver the mandatory pre-bid or we wouldn't be here tonight. That's why people write up the documents, because it makes life easier. So, again, I stand on the documents, what they said. And, I was lower on the equipment time, so depends on how you want to weigh the bid. If there was any improprieties, like I said, bids should never have been accepted or open. I was in the same situation 3 years ago. I bid the job, and they denied me to even submit a bid. So, you know, just you guys can take it from there and make your own decisions. Thank you.
Is there any other member of the public who would like to speak on this? Can we have an administrative report, please?
Thank you, President Pauger, members of the school board. Luke Fulp, Assistant Superintendent of Business and Operations, and I'm here tonight to just explain the district's opinion as stated in a letter to Bill Stearns dated November 27th. It was our notice of determination after the bid protest hearing. There were 3 points during that hearing that Mr. Stearns, on behalf of DNS Road Services, made and basically provided are the district's opinion on each of those points that were made, and I'll just review them briefly and then also respond to some of the assertions made tonight. First is that was that the attendance at the mandatory pre-bid conference was should be waived because attendance at the mandatory pre-bid conference was waived by the school board on November 20th. Therefore, written acknowledgement of questions and answers generated from the pre-bid conference should be waived. It was my determination at that time, and I informed DNS that this would be the district's opinion, is that those are two separate requirements per the bid document. And while the board made took action to waive the mandatory pre-bid, they did not take further action as a body to waive any other requirement of the bid packet. Beyond that, addendum number two does not pertain to Sioux Valley, Talkeetna, or Trapper Creek, as mentioned. It was also mentioned earlier tonight that items within this addendum only reference back to the bid document. That is not the case. There was a request for past tabulation sheets for each of the schools listed. Is the school district awarding by line item or all schools to one vendor? That did reference folks back to the bid document. And then number three was site-specific to Sutton Elementary. Number four was is standing included in the cost of snow plowing. That was a reference back to the contract. And number five and six were separate items that did not reference folks back to the bid document. Do the playgrounds have to be plowed? We answered that question, but also communicated that fire lanes around the school had to be plowed, and then also will parking lots automatically turn on, and the answer was provided, as well as information that our facilities director is looking into having the contractor be able to turn lights on at their when they deem necessary. So there was additional information that was not part of the bid document that was provided, and I just wanted to make the board aware of that as well. And then lastly, there's the issue of the addendums needing to be faxed or sent via U.S. mail. And the district's opinion is simple on this point, is that DNS had a responsibility and failed in that responsibility. DNS had a responsibility to notify the district of their interest to obtain or bid for these services, and we did not know that. There was a conversation, it was referenced earlier tonight, was a conversation between Bill Stearns and our purchasing department. That was a conversation that was had not in a timely manner by any means for us to respond by sending out addendum, because we received a phone call. It wasn't a formal request for addendum to be sent to them. The addendums were on the website, so there was ample opportunity for DNS to actually several weeks for DNS to call the district, request addendums, let us know somehow that they were interested, even visit our website as stated, and they simply failed in that respect. And so this was on its own merits a separate requirement of the bid, and it wasn't within their bid document. I do want to talk to the point of their DNS's bid not being sealed. The document was not sealed. It was opened. The bid was not pulled out by any means or tabulated. It was opened at the request of DNS to let us know that they requested a waiver to the mandatory pre-bid. However, they included that request. That formal request to waive mandatory pre-bid was included in the envelope in which they submitted their bid. So that was the formal request to the school district that they wanted to be considered for business, and it was in the envelope that contained their bid. And that's the only way we could get to it, was to open their bid document. We did not pull their bid out, tabulate it by any means. We waited until the board upheld the decision on November 20th to do so, and that's when we retrieve their bid. So if there's any questions, I can certainly answer those. We also have our purchasing supervisor, Ms. Patty Krause, in the audience tonight, as well as our director of finance, Becky Wright.
Do we have any questions from the board? All right. Do we have any discussion from the board? Member Welton.
Yeah, I recall from the last time that the bid envelope was opened, and it was opened to retrieve that document. And I remember we talked about that. And I think that to bring that up really it doesn't look good for them, because they had to open the envelope to get that piece of paper out. And I know that we talked about it last time, that it was important that document come out of that packet. And so my understanding is that that's not an appropriate response or defense for this.
Are there any other comments by members of the board? Any discussion on this item? All right, Member Larson.
Would you just make sure when we go to vote what we're voting on? I mean, how it falls. Thank you.
All right, so we will move on to the vote. A yes vote on this would be to upheld Mr. Fulp's determination, determination to be non-responsive on the omission of addendum 2. Yes, Mr. Larson.
Then my understanding, that would mean that the bid is a non-receptive bid, isn't it, right?
Yes.
Totally.
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
All right. Member Rutherford.
I vote yes.
Member Larson.
Yes.
Member Welton.
Yes.
Member Michelson?
Yes.
Oh, my goodness. Member Scott?
Yes.
Okay, Member Dearman?
Yes.
And I, too, vote yes. So it has been deemed non-responsive for the bid protest. We are now moving to item E.
I move item 14-049, FY14 budget revisions.
Second.
It has been moved and seconded. Is there any member of the public who would like to speak on this? All right. It looks like we're ready for an administrative report.
Thank you, Madam President. The detail, Luke is going to rather, Mr. Fulp, our Assistant Superintendent for Business, is going to provide the detail for which I spoke to in the superintendent report in regard to the additional revenue brought to the district through the formula funding at the state level. And the primary catalyst for this was additional students, and not only additional students in general education, but a large portion of those students in intensive needs. And we would like to begin a process for which at mid-year each year we would update the budget so that when we create our new budget, it's off of actual numbers rather than the ones that we had predicted. So hopefully this will be helpful to you as well when we meet again starting on next year's budget to have a better mind's eye picture of what is actually current. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Promo, members of the school board. Just going to review the contents of the winter revision for the general fund. We are only focusing on the general fund with this revision. And again, it's precipitated by the student count information that was provided through the 20-day student count in October. That information was submitted to the state in early November. And now that we have made those reports to the state, we feel confident that we can update our projected budget to include increased revenue at this time based on additional students, as mentioned earlier by Dr. Promo. So the first, introducing a series of revisions that we hope to provide to you each year, one of the things that we want to do is create reports that are standard in nature so that when you see them, you know what you're looking at, they're familiar, and you can easily go to the numbers every time to see the change, the adjustments, and also the prior year actuals. So we're going to try to stick to 3 years of prior year actuals, the original budget, and then the revised that's being approved or voted on, and the last column is change from original budget. This is simply revenue by object code, and just want to let folks know the object code is, as defined in the State Uniform Chart of Accounts, it's basically the classification for the type of either the type of revenue, a detailed look at the type of revenue, or on the expense side, a detailed look at the type of expense. And that's what the object code is, the most intuitive part of our chart of account, and the other ones we'll talk more about. But so revenue by object is basically a list of all the different revenue sources for us. Again, the only ones that we adjusted based on the student count information is the state funding. That's the only funding source that is directly tied to our enrollment. The borough appropriation did not change its set, but we did adjust the state sources for state foundation revenue, which is the largest increase of $6.4 million. Quality schools, which is $16 times the adjusted ADM. It's technically part of the foundation formula, but we're asked to create a separate line item for it. It's $18,000. The governor's energy relief is based on ADM, as well as the other state revenue, which is represented by safety and security. Want to quickly go through the foundation formula, and I know that when we get into January, we'll be spending a lot of time on the budget and how this all works. It is a complicated formula for those new board members, so please don't feel like you have to memorize it all tonight. But I do want to just go through and explain how we go from what we had originally under row A was 17,317 in terms of an enrollment projection. That's what we established our original budget on, is that 17,317 number. We actually counted in terms of enrollment in ADM, and Dr. Promo talked about how our actual number of students attending our schools is closer to 17,800. Well, based on the enrollment and the way we have to count it for the state, it's represented as 17,479.5. And that's where the decimal place comes in. It's just based on that enrollment average and over the 20 days. You take that number, and it goes through a series of adjustments. Part of our legislative priorities were to ask for increases within the foundation formula, and we have a couple different things that right off the bat, we have a district cost factor that's 7% above Anchorage. We move on to the VOCED funding factor, which is 1.5%, and then a 20% block grant for special needs factor, which is all of your special services, gifted talented programs, bilingual, bicultural, and voc ed programs. And then we have, after those block grants, we have an adjusted ADM of 23,000. That continues to be adjusted upwards when we include correspondence count. Again, another legislative priority. Right now, we take our 1,700 students who are attending correspondence, and we have to multiply that by 0.8. per the formula. So those 1,700 students are represented in the formula as 1,400. You add those 1,400 to the 23,000 that we had previously, and you come up with 24,891. And then we have one final adjustment to make, and you can see it here. Our projected enrollment for intensive students was 321 under row P. Actual count for intensives was 384. You take that 384 count and multiply it by 13 times the regular student amount, and you have an additional 4,992 adjusted ADM. So you take that 4,992, add it to the 24,000, and you have your total adjusted ADM of 29,883. So while we serve 17,800 roughly, the state through the formula recognizes an adjusted enrollment number of 29,000 for us. We originally projected at 28,700. That's the adjusted ADM, and then this is where the base student allocation comes in. The base student allocation is that set figure of 5,680. It has not changed, continues to remain the same, but we just multiply had 29,000 times the 5,680 to come up with what's called or referred to as basic need. It's what the state looks at as what's the true cost of running and operating the school system here at the Matsu Borough School District, and it's represented by $169.7 million. Out of that, the state says that there is a local contribution that must be made by our borough. That's 2.65 mils of the total full and true value of the assessed borough property, real and true property. And so that's 25.3 that comes off the top. And what we get out of the foundation formula is that 144.3. We tack on the quality schools of 16 times the adjusted ADM, and it increases it by about $500,000. Our total foundation formula then is represented as $144,863,000. So long and short of it, is it a complicated formula? Yes, we'll spend more time on it. I have a stick figure slideshow that I've heard helps with some of this, but that's the process for getting our adjusted ADM and our total state funding. Yes, Ole.
You made a statement that it's complicated for the new board members. I'll make a statement that it's more than complicated for the old board members also.
Okay.
The way this is done is just absolutely defies mathematics. But, that's the way it is, and it's created that way. The one question I do have, since you said 2.5 mils is local contribution, now the districts that don't have a mill rate or don't have a tax for property, they're simply they get the full basic needs. Is that it? They get the full amount, not the deduction?
Through the president, they do not have a required local contribution, but they do have an impact aid deductible. It'd be really interesting to apply minimum contribution to some of those locations. They don't have a substantial tax base to begin with. In some of the very remote sites, some of the very small districts, the organized boroughs, any organized borough is held to that minimum required contribution. But if they're not, and really all school districts that receive impact aid funding, they do have it. There is an impact aid deductible that's factored into this. And as soon as we begin to receive impact aid funding, that will be included in the very end of the foundation formula. We have applied for it in the last couple years. It's another thing that makes this calculation even more complicated. So I'll spare you the details unless you would like more information.
At a later date, it'll be fine.
Okay. I'll carry on then. The next summary is expense by object. This is the same way that we represented the revenues. The object code, again, just tells you a very direct line item what the costs are. So you can see within this graph we have the 3 years actuals, and then we have the original and revised budget, and then the change column. You can see through this revision we're increasing certified salaries by 3.5 million, salaries for non-certificated 453, and then benefits increase as a result of those additional positions that Dr. Pramo mentioned. We have other adjustments throughout the budget. There is 580,000 that's moved from supplies to transfers to other funds. I just want to mention the big part of that is the way we account for Matsu Central student allotments throughout the year. We track that on a subledger out of the different software system. And so we basically transfer it to a different bank account in order to do that. It's very technical, but that's really money that is still being used for supplies. I just wanted to make that point. While it looks like we're decreasing it, we're still using it for students, and it's still going to the classroom. The next summary is by function. This is the way that we adhere to the state's requirement of 70% of our funds being spent in the classroom or related to students. So what you see is all of the functions listed out per the Uniform Chart of Accounts. The cutoff for the 70% is function 400, school administration. Everything above 400 is considered within the 70%. Everything below, school administration support, on down is outside of the 70%, so that falls into the 30 that's allowable. And if you want to look at functions and think about it in terms of the classroom, the 100 is as close as you can get to the student, and then from there on out, It's organized as it you get further and further away from the classroom instruction. So you can see that there's increases to all of those functions, 100 through 400. That's the majority of our money went there, as well as you can see very large increases in the areas of special education instruction and special education support services as a result of our additional intensive students. The money went to provide services in those areas. And I wanted to just give you peace of mind on this graph. It shows the 70-30. The original budgets in the background there, you can see that our instructional percentage was 77.81%. And with this revised budget, we've gone from to 77.94. So technically, we've increased instructional money through this revision, and we're getting closer to that 80%. That would be a pretty sweet deal. I think it'd be the top in the state for sure. Yes.
Does your funding of the does this pie chart show the in-kind monies that we the pass through the for the PERS and TERS, that part, is that included in this?
Through the president, PERS and TERS on behalf is included in this factor. Yeah, and per the state's the law, it's allowed to be included. Mm-hmm. As operational funds. And then lastly, or I guess we have a couple more slides. I'll try to get through these quickly. Changes from the original budget by type. We do have a way of tracking our expenses. It's different categories. Mainly, you can see in major categories are salaries and benefits, discretionary, and I want to provide a little bit more information on what discretionary means. It's not as though there's no intended purpose for this money and that it's purely discretionary, but it's been provided to the schools as funding for non-personnel, school supplies, curriculum materials, all of those things, but we rely on budget managers to make the appropriate expenditures for that money. So it rests with budget managers, principals, directors, who are responsible for those specific areas in the school system. We have utilities after salaries and benefits and discretionary. You can see we have very little left in the budget. We have utilities, 3%, and then we have a restricted district-managed funds, which is basically snow plowing some of the major contracts that we hold. We want to cost-center them to the schools, but we don't want the schools to change those figures, so we restrict them in our system. And these are just some of the major changes where it was discretionary, where it's managed by the location. $418,000 went to non-charter schools for enrollments. As enrollments increased, we give a per-pupil allocation based on the metric. We, with the student counts, we just made sure that those dollars followed the students where they were. And then $213,000 went to charter schools for their changed enrollment as well. We provided $267,000 in a one-time increase to school discretionary funds for educational light grant for those principals to manage and make use of, again, providing money to the classroom. And then $250,000 for district-wide safety equipment that we will be focusing very much on, and Dr. Promo can talk to it if she wants at this time, but helmets for the football programs and concussion awareness and some of those other safety pieces. And then $100,000 for an adjustment to student support services, and then a couple other adjustments for expenses that were inadvertently left out of the original budget, namely the Mat-Su Central lease was somehow left off, and additional discretionary funds for student support services. So we've basically corrected some of and have adjusted some of those after the adoption. And then changes to salaries and benefits. This just gives you a layout of all of the adjustments that we've made. In total, from the original budget, the revised budget includes 81.09 FTE in addition to what was originally approved. 52 are due to increased enrollment and additional intensive needs students. So based on the ratios and providing services to those new students in the district, we've added those positions into the budget. 13 are changes to charter school staffing, so that's managed at this charter school level. And then 7.5 FTE are in additional to student support services, of which 4.5 are due to hiring positions that were previously covered under the professional technical services. So while we originally thought we were going to have to contract out services at a very high rate, we were able to hire qualified therapists and OTPTs, speech language pathologists, some of those hard to fill positions. We were able to acquire employees for those positions. And then just some other miscellaneous adjustments to the FTE. Changes to the restricted district managed. The biggest one is we moved the advanced path contract, which was previously cost center to Wasilla, that has now been cost center to Burchell, where advanced path is located. And that change occurred over the summer. So it was just a housekeeping item of moving money to account for that. And then snow plowing services, there was adjustments made to move it out of O&M and to cost center to school sites. Non-personnel expenses by location. This provides you a breakdown of what occurred, the history, but also the original and revised budget for each site, and taking out salaries and benefits. So you can see for the majority of school sites, if they didn't have increased enrollment, they did receive that one-time educational grant provided through the Department of Instruction, and ranging from $7,500 to $5,000 in the last column there. And total revisions and adjustments, most of which are due to student enrollment. Those are the slides, and I hope to, in future revisions, just provide those summaries for you. If there's more information that you would like to see, if there's something missing from this revision that you think that would be very helpful to your decision making, we would gladly make sure that we provide that. I'd answer any questions at this time.
Member Larson.
Yeah, in the future, I like your three-year actuals that go in. We didn't get that in our original packet, so I'd like that added in the future. That really helps out a lot.
Are there any other questions from the board? I know this is a complicated subject. So it is before us for voting on budget revisions. A yes vote would mean we are approving the budget revisions as outlined by Mr. Fulp. Member Dearman.
Yes.
Member Rutherford.
Yes.
Member Larson.
Yes.
Member Welton.
Yes.
Member Michelson.
Yes.
Member Scott.
Yes.
I too vote yes. We have now approved the budget revisions. That brings us to non-action items. Non-action item A, first reading of board policy 6146, graduation requirements. We will have an administrative report.
Madam President, for the next two non-action items, we do have a very brief. Just we put them in PowerPoint form to kind of introduce you to them, and we'll have so if there's additional requests prior to our next meeting to specifically garner which questions to ask sometimes. So this is a general overview, and we will provide additional information as time moves on, but it is basically a time to if you ask us questions, we will bring all the information back to you in a packet and more comprehensive. But this is just a first view of action items that you will see in the new year.
All right. Good evening, Dr. Promo, School Board President Pauger, and School Board. My name is Mike Verbalo. I'm the Executive Director of Instruction, and I'm here tonight to talk about graduation credits and the request to increase them. If you go to our first slide, reasons why we would like to increase the graduation credits. If you guys remember, in 2011 and 12, we moved from a 6-period day to a 7-period day. That meant we went from a required or a possibility of having 24 credits in a four-year tenure at the Mat-Su School District to 28. Our credits are still at 22.5 for our kids. And so for the last couple of years, I know school board members as well as staff have been asking, when are we going to make the move to increase credits? We've been working with principals and counselors the last several years, looking at what we thought the best option would be, and then also looking at how long and what the possibilities were to continue with that model. And once we figured that we were there and we were going to continue with it, we would make the move for our future classes. Students potentially, like I said, can have 28 credits with this new model. Across the United States and in Alaska, we're no different. We're under a four-year model, so the expectation is that we would have enough credits or expect enough credits for kids to maintain that four-year program, which, like I said, they have 28 credits possible. We are currently are asking our kids to have 22.5, so we're looking at what kind of increase is reasonable for all the students without making it too difficult where we have a higher dropout rate and less of a graduation rate. In real simple form, this slide just shows exactly what the request is for the public. We are asking currently, our current sophomores are at 22.5, like I said, and we're asking for that current sophomore class to not be raised to 24.5, but instead 23.5. For the freshman class, we're asking it to be moved from 22.5 to 24.5. Why the difference? The difference is we want to make sure the kids that are in our program, that are already in there, like the sophomores, the juniors and seniors, don't have that same expectation. We don't want an I gotcha. We want to make sure kids understand and have that opportunity to make their, you know, their selections for courses and their future in an appropriate manner. This slide just sort of shows you proportionately, percentage-wise, where we were at in the class of 2011, or back in the year 2011, we had 21 credits that were required out of 24. That's when, like you said, we made that change. Back in 2011 and 12, we were on a six-period day. Possibility of 24 credits. The ratio of what kids would have to graduate with 21 credits is 87%. If you look over to the right side of that column, if we move currently with a seven-period day in the 28 credits with 24.5, it's exactly the same at 87% that it was in 2011. So the expectation is the exact same that we'd have for our graduating class. And that was sort of a deciding factor when we were working with principals and counselors, trying to make something that's reasonable for our kids but not make it too difficult. We wanted to allow for flexibility with AP offerings, accelerated course offerings, as well as remediation classes. We wanted to keep a similar benchmark in both those years. And like I said, really over about the last year and a half with counselors and principals, we really vetted that out and tried to come up with a reasonable solution. The bars in the middle would just sort of show you in a bar graph form what those classes would look like if we didn't increase any requirements. And that class of 2014 is our current 12th graders. And their ratio of what they would have to pass to graduate would be 81%. And we're not changing that. And the reason we're not, like I said, we don't want to do an I gotcha with kids that are already in the system. We're going to allow them to stay with the same 22 required credits. They're actually not at 22.5, they're at 22. And just have a good plan for them, working with their counselors to have a good post-secondary plan for them. The class of, like 2016, the one that has 22 there, are under a 28 credit model under the 7-period day. If we didn't move them, that bar graph just shows they would be at an 80%. They'd only have to pass 80% of their classes if we didn't make a change, which means they would graduate at the beginning of their senior year. They'd take three classes and be able to graduate. Similarly, the class of 2016, that's our 10th grade class, that bar graph just shows when we do move that to 23.5, their actually passing ratio they'll have to be at is 83%. So it's getting up there, but we still want to make sure that we give them an opportunity and time to make good class selections with their counselors and their families. And so that page just basically shows you the increase of 24.5 is the same as it was back in 2011. Like I said earlier, our goal is in our system across the state, across the country, is to have a four-year model in high school, and we want to maintain and keep that. One of the nice things when we moved to the 7-period day and actually increasing the request to increase our graduation requirements really aligns us with the Alaska Performance Scholarship. In the Alaska Performance Scholarship, you have to have four core classes called the 4x4. And what that basically means is you need to have 4 English, 4 social studies, 4 science, and 4 maths, along with a PE and health that we require, which is 1.5, and then 7 elective classes, such as foreign language, art, music, CTE courses, AP courses, and so on. By increasing the offerings that we have, and that's when we moved to the 7-period day, it actually gave our kids an opportunity to have 28 credits. Moving the credits up as a required 24.5 makes it much easier. I won't say makes it easy, but it makes it easier for our kids in this district to qualify for the Alaska Performance Scholarship. And raising that expectation, like I said, gives them that opportunity, holds them accountable for high rigor, but still gives a lot of room for those kids that are at risk to still have room to take remediation courses and other offerings to keep school interesting. Like I said, a student can earn 28 credits in the new system that we have under 4 years. The proposal that we're making is for 24 credits. And we've worked on this for about a year and a half and really have vetted it out pretty well throughout the district and feel very comfortable in the recommendation. There's, you know, with however many people you have, there's always different opinions, but this one seemed to come right down where most people agreed on it. Is it 100%? Never is. But I would say the vast majority of principals and counselors agreed on this number and felt it would hold the high rigor for kids. It was very similar to what we've had in the past. And so we felt very comfortable from the Office of Instruction to make this recommendation for the board. Thank you, and I can answer any questions that you may have.
All right. Are there any questions from members of the board? Member Rutherford.
I'm going to ask it. Did anyone say, so does this mean the 7-period day is never going away?
I have heard that from several people. And I think that's sometimes some people's frustration is they think, wow, if we increase the graduation requirements, this is the line. And the reality is we have to move forward. And we knew that from the beginning. When you move to an increased credit possibility, to leave it where it was at makes no sense. And this is good for kids. And like I said, it holds them to a very similar academic expectation that we had in 2011. When we look at our dropout and graduation rates, this is going to give kids 7 classes that they can use to flex, whether they are doing extremely well and want to take a first period off, if they want to take AP courses, honor courses. It just leaves a lot of opportunities for kids. But yes, I've heard that.
Member Larson.
So how is it going to assist? You said it's going to assist our kids that are in trouble or remedial kids. How is it going to do that?
It gives kids an opportunity. When we look at double dipping, if you look at the data for our district, when I say double dipping, it means that when a kid has a math class, they're going to have a support math class. When they have an English class, they may have a Read 180 class. It gives them a support class in their academic area. And it's not just for at-risk kids. I've seen kids that are AP kids that take a support seminar class. When we were under a 6-period model, it was a lot more difficult to have that opportunity to have that many sections out there. So when we went to a model that gave us more sections, they have that chance to take a remediation math class, a remediation 1, you know, reading class. And so that really does support those kids in that venue.
Member Williams, do you have any comments on this?
I do have comments on this. I know that students in Student Advisory Board have been asking probably since September. They've heard a little bit of rumors, oh, is there going to be more credit requirements? And I've been like, we're waiting. We'll see. So I'm happy this has come out. Maybe we could have you come by to a meeting sometime and explain this to students, or you could send me the PowerPoint and I could go through it with them as well. I think this is an advantage to students. A lot of students say, hey, I got my 22 or 22.5 credits. I'm done. I'm ready. I can go to college. But I think this allows for students to really grow within those 4 years we're in high school. I know, like, for me, after this year, I just need one more class and I can graduate. But I think this will allow students to take more opportunities in high school, so I support the credit requirement adjustment. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Seeing no more comments, if you want to move on to the math curriculum.
Madam President, the math curriculum is our adjustment of our Mat-Su Borough School District curriculum to match the new Alaska state standards. And so here is the collective work of the group, and we will hear about it. Thank you.
Madam President, Dr. Paramo, school board members, I'm very excited to bring to you tonight this curriculum. And since it is a night of recognition, I would just like to publicly acknowledge all of the teachers and the staff and the Office of Instruction that helped put this massive 230-page document together. So publicly, I'd like to just say thank you to all of them. This report is really brief, but I'm going to start with a little review because I think it's important to understand that when we were doing our math adoption and revisions, it really was in relation to our curriculum review cycle. We were already up for the sixth year of math. We were working on moving forward with all of our revisions and updates when we knew that the Alaska state standards were coming out and going to be new. And we had an option. We could have chosen to go with English language arts or math. But because we were already in our review cycle, we decided just to move forward. Slow and steady wins the race. And so that's what we did. In addition, I would like you to know that this document that's been presented through the board memo with all of the different levels of elementary, middle school, and high school, every single one of those standards has been aligned to the new Alaska state standard. So it's not in relation to Common Core or any of those things. Everything has been aligned to Alaska. In regards to the content expertise, I think it's really important for you to understand really the scope. We had 36 different math teachers work on this documentation. We had 14 elementary schools represented with over 20 different teachers. At the middle and high school level, we had 10 different schools represented and 16 teachers. In addition, I would also like to publicly acknowledge Mr. John Gardner, who is our math and science secondary coordinator. He was very instrumental in working with our Algebra 1, Algebra 2, and Geometry documentation. It was a lot of teamwork. There was a lot of work involved in getting information to our teachers about the new standards. They revised their mission statement to really look at college and career readiness. They identified all the different grade level changes that happened. And the bulk of the work was really looking at the new standards and writing measurable objectives for our students. In addition, they checked alignment. And the biggest piece that is new is providing teaching examples. This is something that we have not done in curriculum before. And it is new, not just here, but across many different states. And we just really felt that as our instructional focus is really to get the best tools and teaching strategies into the hands of our teachers, that it was very pertinent information. In regards to that, our stakeholder review comments were overwhelmingly positive in regards to the examples that were provided by the team. To show you just a quick comparison of some of the differences that the team worked on, I've given you a previous standard, or what we would call a GLE, and the new standard. And I used a second grade example. In looking at the difference in the two columns, the first column, it says understanding operations. And you can see that in the second column, that domain or that topic has been changed now to say number and operations in base 10. It has been identified previously as second grade numbers dash 5. That means the standard number. And it's been updated on the second side. Well, one of the things that's really important to understand in the difference in the rigor and the expectation of what teachers are going to be teaching is that previously it was just describe or illustrate. And now there is a significant paradigm shift to having students explain their thinking in math. So they really wanted to make sure that that explicitness of what students are able to do was represented in all of the new standards. And this is something that is prevalent throughout the new standards from the state of Alaska. So you will see that it's very explicit in what they should do, and it really raises the rigor and goes more in depth for each one of the different standards. Previously, when we took those standards and we wrote a GLE, or from the GLEs, we wrote the measurable objectives, and it would say describe and illustrate the properties of additional whole numbers and the relationships. This was our curriculum. This was the objective that teachers were to measure. And it was very well vetted. It was at the time, 6 years ago, some of the best writing that we had done with our objectives in our state. Now it looks very significantly different. What we have done is taken the standard. We have unpacked every single standard into measurable, quantifiable objectives, and this is K-12. And what we have done is provided multiple examples for teachers and for parents and for students. So if they're not understanding what is being asked of them, they now have multiple resources that they can access. The reason our document is so long is not because there are more standards and more objectives. It's because there are more examples of how to teach it and more instructional strategies for teachers. And really what had happened from the state is our standards and our objectives are much deeper, more rigorous, and there are fewer of them all the way through the progressions of K-12. So what we are presenting, really, if you think about a curriculum framework and all the previous presentations that I've been fortunate to give, is that really tonight I'm only giving you half of the framework, and that is the curriculum. Because what we did is we wrote the curriculum based on the Alaska State standards, the objectives, and we've now given you the scope or the K-12 perspective of what students should know and be able to do at every level. The next section that will come to you in the beginning of the year is what do we do now with since we have a curriculum? And that would mean that we looked at our programs and our textbooks, and we will vet that process through the materials adoption process. We know that programs and texts have content, vocabulary, teaching strategies, technology, all of those tools woven together. Where our next set of vetting after the curriculum is approved is to go through and to check out those materials and see if what we have currently is working, how it's working, and then determine what we need to do to move forward to marry the best possible programs to our written curriculum. So I've provided for you very briefly a little adoption timeline so you'll know what to expect in the coming year. Starting in the second semester, January 6th through February 20th is really where we will do the materials adoption process. The team will reassemble, and that team is really a combination of all the people who worked on the curriculum previously with a few members added. And this is where we really like to get administration involved and principals. Then they'll look at the leveled rubrics. Those are the guides for selection, and those are a combination of our district philosophy, our district mission statements, in addition to some of the other concrete components that may be provided by the state. The team will then go through the screening and selection process. And once they've done that, the team ranks their top three programs. This process has been in place in our district for a significant amount of time. But one of the things that we want to make sure happens, especially with something as humongous as math or language, is we really have an administrative team that will come and be involved in that process. And that administrative team includes a superintendent, both assistant superintendents, executive directors, principals, and coordinators. So we can make sure that what we are doing is going to be sustainable and viable in the future. Our timeline completes all the way through August of next year. Once that materials adoption process has been completed and the selection has been made, it will go to the Curriculum Council. Our intent is to have it there by February 27th. After that, it will come to you March 5th, which is an administrative report, much like this one tonight with our curriculum. From there, school board action, and with your approval, then we will work towards district purchasing, distribution, and then finally in August, we are working currently on a plan for the implementation and professional development. The goal for the curriculum that is before you now is once it is approved is that we want to distribute it as soon as possible. So our teachers, especially in the K-2 area, can start making those significant changes and paradigm shifts, and getting this document into the hands of our teachers sooner than later helps them to make that transition towards all the new changes with new assessment and teacher evaluation. So, in a nutshell, that is really what is happening with the K-12 math curriculum. And again, there was a lot of people who were involved in this process to bring this comprehensive document for you. But we'd be happy to answer any questions you have.
Member Larson.
When I opened this up, of course, I was a little awestruck, so I called a few people. Few teachers out there, and I opened up the document and I went over it with them, and the feedback that I got, and I guess that's the same feed you got, is the examples were what they really love. Okay, it's the fact that you have a standard to be met and the objective of each standard, but then you have the example. And what, you know, elementary as well as high school love that idea of the example. And what the feedback I got on this, just and I encourage all board members to talk to teachers about this, was it doesn't matter the method of teaching. It's the standard that's there. Knowing that our high school, or all our teachers are usually from different colleges and different education systems, the method of presenting the material is okay just as long as the standards are the same. So when a kid, I read in a paper, what was it, Monday, where Anchorage was talking about trying to standardize their curriculum because one out of five kids are going to move schools. Well, this standardized, and we've had this, but this standardized curriculum, say, in fourth grade all the way across. So if a kid moves, they don't have to start over with a new teacher with a new curriculum. So the feedback was really good there. The one question I do have for you, when you're talking about textbooks, and quick example, then I'll be quiet, I promise. When I was outside last year or this year, for a deaf family, we were sitting around, the whole family sitting around at a restaurant, and one of my nephews, who was in high school, had his iPad there, and I finally said, "What are you doing? You're not playing a game." He was looking at his textbook, his math textbook, which was interactive textbook, and he was talking to him. And then he came over, and we sat down and went through his textbook. So the question is, are we going to have the opportunity for a kid to have their textbook on the iPad, as well as if a kid wants a regular textbook, of course, but are we going to have that opportunity?
And when Ms. Murphy was talking about the rubric, a technology component will be a significant part of that. As you know, almost all of our classrooms have Promethean boards, and many of the new instructional materials, Imagine It, our K-2 literacy program, has interactive software built right into it for those Promethean boards. The 3-8 literacy curriculum has online textbooks as a teacher. I gave all the kids their own code, and they were able to look at their literature textbook online, so if they were absent, they could do the work. And so that is one of the things that we'll be looking at when we're vetting potentially new math programs.
Because one of the big arguments is a lot of kids are pulled out of school in January and February, take 2 weeks to go on vacation, and if they had their online textbook with interaction, maybe to the, you know, through a teacher's website, that they could actually keep up with the material. And the parent would tell the kid, "You have no excuse not to do this work."
And it's the way that they love to learn. So we absolutely want to harness that. If they're willing to sit at the table with company and work on a textbook versus playing a game, then we want to take advantage of that.
Yeah, this kid shocked me. I mean, it was like, you know, I thought I was just going to chew him out for playing a game at the table, and he was looking at his textbook, you know. And it was, he was excited about it because it was the way he learned and the way he... He had to come see us at night, but he had a test the next morning, so he brought his iPad with him to study while he was at the restaurant, and it worked out real good for him.
Yeah, and Member Larson, one of the things that you also mentioned was parents being able to also access and help, and that is going to be an item in our rubric, that how parent-friendly is this math program, and can they understand by the examples in the book and then help show their children how to do that. So it's not just alignment with the standards. There's a variety of different levels that we'll be looking at materials through.
Thank you.
Member Welton.
Thank you. On the page where you're showing the new objective and have the examples and things, the idea, the objective of students explain the processes of addition and subtraction, their relationship to place value. I just want you to know that I was in my 20s when I finally figured out that the bundles of sticks that they gave me that said these were ones, these were tens, and these were hundreds, it finally dawned on me what they were doing. I had no clue what I was supposed to do with those, and I never had to explain it. If I had to explain it, I probably would have learned it in second grade. So I like that idea.
Just one other follow-up.
Member Rutherford?
First a compliment, then a question. So math is my thing, so I didn't ask any teachers because when you have your opinion, if you're not comfortable, you go out and ask. If you're comfortable with the subject, you don't want anyone else to mess with your own opinion.
And, I'm not comfortable. You're correct.
Yeah. So math is my thing, and when I opened this up, all I can say is, wow, so much work went into this, but I was so impressed with the detail and the examples and the progression and the way things are introduced very young at a very, very basic level and then expanded on as you go down through the grades. So I was really impressed, and boy, was I not doing that level of math at that age. But when you mentioned parent, the ability of the parent to assist, because we all learned our own way. We don't want to step on the teacher's toes, so we do need to know how the teacher is presenting it so that we don't further confuse our child, which I've been guilty of by trying to teach them our own way. So how do you... There was that online survey input that went out that people could look, and anybody, any community member could make comments. Are there other points at which community members, not just staff, can make comments? And then how do you tackle the issue when you get to materials of I guess you stick to your rubric, but being sold a bill of goods by a good salesperson from a publishing company.
Well, I'm going to let Becky answer your specific questions about that. But I want to say that I appreciate her accolades that she gave the writing team, and I think that we had masterful teachers on it. But our district is so lucky to have Becky Murphy as our curriculum coordinator. Her knowledge and depth of skills in leading this process is really, I would say, probably the best in the state. And I have spent a lot of time over the last few years learning about curriculum development, and constantly go to Becky and learn new things every day. And so I so appreciate the positive comments that you make about the quality of this document, because it really is a state-of-the-art document that she did.
And to follow up on your last question, because Becky might or Mrs. Murphy may not know that, I come off sometimes as a friendly person quite friendly, but in the world of folks who want to sell our district something, I'm one of the most difficult superintendents, because I do not go out. I do not take dinner dates, not like a date, but like dinner, a request to sit down at dinner, free items. I do have that kind of used car salesman look that they're probably going to sell me. So what I do is involve the people who know the work. The teams are the ones, the people using the items are the ones who have the most say in the selection of them, because you are absolutely right. I could have lots of free stuff, but it makes me quite nervous, because this is public monies going into the education of youth. It has nothing to do with somebody making a buck. And that is just a core value. And I don't step in the marketplaces at conferences, because that is the main goal, to sell you. And usually a district superintendent has that authority. And so I have no interest, and the folks that run the departments for which those items are purchased are the ones who make the recommendation up.
Okay, now I'll try to answer that question. One of the things that we did in the past with curriculum development is we have an open house once that selection happens, so the public can come, and the people who are making that selection are available to answer any questions. So, and in addition to that, one of the things that's really powerful is that when we bring forward our ultimate choice, we will give you documentation as to why, if there's a specific program or a textbook or something that didn't make the cut, we'll be able to tell tell you exactly why it didn't make it into the final selection piece. But when it comes to Dr. Paramo's philosophy, you can guarantee that we will not be swayed by that kind of technical savviness of some of our vendors. And our vendors that I have relationships with know that. And one of the other ways that we're going to make sure that that doesn't happen and be swayed is really our teachers that are working on this will have an opportunity to really get into the product to see what some of those snafus may be or really ask tough, deep questions about what it looks like for the sustainability of our district, because we want the absolute best for our kids in this district. So hopefully that answered your question.
That's good.
Okay, I'm not seeing any more questions. My question is kind of Member Rutherford's question. The team that decides the materials adoption, that I understand that's going to be the teachers and the people who are going to be using that. Is there any parents, member of the public who are on that team, or do we give them a chance to come view it after the selection's made?
Well, that is still in process right now. In the past, there have been public commentary. This is new for us because of the scope of the change in all of the different standards. And so we're working on right now who we will be adding to that team, and that's something that Dr. Paramo and the executive directors will be looking at to determine who exactly is going to sit on that team and what that open house is going to look like and whether we're going to be receiving public commentary from parents before or after the vote.
I do just have a comment.
Sure.
Common Core is kind of a dirty word, and
yes,
we don't use that in our school district because we don't have Common Core. But in parents explaining to me their concerns on Alaska state standards and different things like that, it didn't seem to be the curricula that the parents were concerned about. It was usually the materials that went along with the curricula. So I just wanted to, reinforce it's very important that we include people, give them a good chance to look at our materials before we implement them.
Absolutely. And one of the comments and one of the things I'd like to brief the board on is that Alaska, as independent as we are, we cannot have our own curriculum written for us. So a lot of the different companies that are out there, the materials that we will be looking at may have the terminology Common Core on them. So it's something that we know that we have to start putting out to the public right away. Unlike Texas and California, who have the money to actually write a textbook for their company, Alaska does not have that privilege. So when we are looking at materials, we will be scrutinizing them very much. But we also know that somewhere, somehow, you might see CCSS on those materials, and there's really not a whole lot we can do about that.
Member Welton.
I was going to make a comment. I get, as an adjunct professor, I get notification from companies all the time, you want to create your own textbook, we'll help you put it together. Is that a possibility for us?
That would be something we would look at. We actually did that with our civics textbook. So depending when we get to the point of where we're in our selection and getting it down to those final vendors, that is absolutely something we'll look at. But I just think it's important that the public and this board know that if we do adopt a material, a newest version, if we stayed with either of our math programs right now, the newest version of those two math programs has Common Core on it. So that's just terminology because they're updating and moving forward with all their revisions to match the masses. So we'll definitely be looking at all of our options when we get there.
All right. Are there any other questions? Member Larson.
Just want to say good job and a lot of work. I appreciate it. It's only going to help our kids and our teachers and everybody else that's involved in education. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you so much. So we'll move on to future items, future business. December 6th, 16th, we have our meeting with the MATSU delegation. It is here at the MATSU Central office. What do we have planned for that meeting?
Madam President, we will be welcoming our delegation and our board, of course, and any guests that you'd like to bring that evening. It will be less formal. We will not be sitting up here on our board seats, but rather at tables on the floor out there. You won't have to sit on the floor. But we have the marching band that will be performing at the Rose Bowl. Coming up soon here in January. So Colony High in full uniform will be demonstrating that. We also will have a student from Tenaya Elementary School recite some history poems as well. And we will have a review which will demonstrate the return on the investment for which our delegation believed in us, funded us, those additional $3.5 million for special programs last year. And our goal is to demonstrate to them what we've done, that we were good stewards of that money, that our kids are, we're moving forward. Part of that will be sharing about online learning, Alaska Middle College, the ROTC, different things like that that they funded to show the return on the investment. And then right after we do that, when they've had dinner, enjoyed the band, saw what we've done, we will hand them the new request and send them off happy for a good holiday so that they can think about those requests in Mat-Su and understand that we'd like to partner with them, that we do believe in innovation, good, solid education for kids that leads and helps them fulfill their dreams.
All right, so that's our meeting on December 16th, and it is here with dinner.
Correct.
All right. So that... Is there any other future items, future business anybody needs to announce? Member Welton?
Just those policy updates will come to us just as they are completed by administration. And I don't know if they'll be vetted by the policy board or the policy committee, but those are coming up.
Okay.
We do not have a meeting, though.
So. All right. So those will be coming to us soon, it sounds like. So any other future items, future business? Ms. Williams?
Yes, our next student advisory board is next Wednesday, December 11th, 9 a.m. to noon at Colony Middle School. If any of you guys want to come over and say hi, it would be lovely to have you. You can drop by, you can sit for a little while. Anything and everything is welcome. Thank you.
All right, thank you. So we are to our second persons to be heard in this meeting. Looking out at the audience, I don't see anybody new. So this is your second chance to be heard by the board. Is there anyone in the audience who would like to make comment to the board tonight? All right, seeing no one, we will move on to correspondence and board committee reports. Have we had any board committees meet? Member Welton.
Yes, we had the assembly, the joint assembly and school board committee met, and I will defer to the other two members who were there.
Member Rutherford.
We had a bond project update similar to the one we received here tonight. We answered a few questions that have been brought up in the past, like the ice rink. And we, that was it. It was a very short meeting. Did I leave something out?
Member Welton?
There was a discussion about the possibility of using Glacier View as an emergency shelter, and that was information that, that was passed on to administration to look into that. Mm-hmm. And just double check here.
The borough mayor was at Glacier View.
Yeah.
During an extended power outage, and they asked.
Okay.
Okay.
All right. So that sounds like it. Any other committee or correspondence that members would like to report? All right. Seeing none, we'll move on to comments from school board and administration. Dr. Paramo?
Thank you, Madam President. As this is our last official regular school board meeting for the year 2013, I just want to wish everyone happy holidays and look forward to a new year. We have lots going on in our schools, and I hope that in the school or the neighborhood or any school for which you live the closest or maybe your work is, that you could stop by. Lots of celebrations and good times and good learning to be had still this year. And I just thanks for the opportunity to be the superintendent of the best school district in Alaska.
All right. Member Scott, would you like to make comments?
No.
All right. Member Michelson?
And I will just we'll just mention I had an opportunity to go to Sioux Valley High School, I think it was a week ago tonight, actually, to watch Romeo and Juliet with my wife. And I'd never gone to a Shakespeare play before. And I just have to say that those kids really, really did a marvelous job with Shakespeare. I mean, all those intricate lines and things and the delivery. It was just really, really something to see and experience. So I'd like to really commend, I think it's the history teacher, Kathy Trump, was the director of the play up there. And if you know her or get a chance to see her, she just did an absolutely marvelous job with those kids in that place.
Member Walton.
Thank you. I want to say thanks to Becky again. Well done, and I really enjoyed the presentation on the curriculum. I was at Burchell for Thanksgiving, and it was fabulous. I ran into some people that I worked with more than 20 years ago, and they were involved in the school district here, and then they moved out to Nome, and they were just back for the weekend, so it was really neat to see them and their kids, and that they were part of the Burchell family because they had had some students go through that. The Burchell dancers, if you get a chance to see them, they are fabulous. And these students that they had this year, most of them were new. And they've only had a few weeks of lessons. And they just did an incredible job. And it's energetic. And it's just wonderful to be there. And Burchell did a very good job of feeding the multitudes as well as providing entertainment and knowing that the kids really like that school and they work to stay there. So it's a great thing. And I just wish happy holidays to those who I won't see, who won't be at our next meeting. And thank you.
Member Larson.
Same. Happy holidays to everybody, Christmas, Hanukkah, and have a safe trip if you're going to travel during that period, and a good New Year's. I look forward to next year. Again, I really appreciate the updates on the budget, on the bonds issue, and on the curriculum. There's a lot of work, it looks like, being done, and I really do appreciate it. And I also, again, appreciate the Board Connect and all the information that the school board gets now, whereas 3 or 4 years ago we didn't get we got a minuscule amount compared to today, and it helps make us more aware and be able to make decisions on what's going on and answer questions to the public, because we do get a lot of questions. So again, thank you for everything, and I appreciate it.
Member Rutherford.
I didn't get a chance at the last meeting to give a shout out to the Palmer High School hosted jazz festival by Stan Harris. I was able to attend that in early November, and I just want to commend Stan Harris. It was just, it's great what he pulls together there. I went to the concert in the evening, and all the students from all the schools were just incredible. I was especially impressed by middle schoolers. They haven't even been playing their instruments very long, and here they are in a specialized jazz program, and they did. I'm a jazz lover, and so it, I just enjoyed the whole evening. And thank you to Radio Free Palmer, who actually broadcast that concert, for snowbird and out-of-state grandparents could actually get on and listen to their grandchild's concert. I also was able to go briefly to the Student Advisory Board meeting, and I really enjoyed that. It was the first one I finally fit into my schedule. I wasn't there for long, but I enjoyed my time there, and definitely will be back. And lastly, I was asked to pass along a thank you to school district staff, students, administration, everyone from an organization I spend a lot of time with this time of year, and that's the Matsu Special Santa Program. It is the Valley, basically the Valley Toys for Tots. In their 16th year, they provided 3,700 children last year with winter clothes, books, and a toy for Christmas in a coordinated effort with, you know, foster program, the Salvation Army, and a lot of other programs around the Valley. And they said that this year they have received a lot of donations from schools and classes. Teachers and students themselves have decided to do drives for them, and they really appreciate it. And I think that it just speaks to the fact that our school district is a reflection of our community, and our community is a generous community. And so I'm not surprised that our students are participating in a giving program like that.
Member Dierman.
I would like to say that the awards recognition this evening was a great way to start off the evening, and it was especially nice for me to see the five young students from Talkeetna Elementary on the program, and I was very happy to see Bailey Mashenko be able to make it up here to receive her award. A great presentation on Alaska Middle College. It just goes to show the great opportunities that there are available in the MATSU, and it makes me realize how very proud I am to be sitting on this great, prestigious school board. Congratulations to MATSU Central School for their great award, the Apple Distinguished Schools Award. They are most deserving of it. And it makes me, again, proud to know that I am sitting on one of their committees at that school, so kudos to them. Along with Member Michelson, I also, with my husband, was at the Romeo and Juliet performance last Wednesday evening at Sioux Valley High School, and you haven't lived until you've seen Romeo and Juliet in 1991 in Seattle, Washington. It was a new spin. And it was indeed incredible. And I would just like to piggyback on what Mr. Michelson said. For those smaller schools in other parts of the district who do not have dedicated teachers for such programs as drama, art, and music, the teachers that do take on those extra responsibilities and allow the students to just blossom in those areas, those teachers deserve so much credit and so much thanks for what they do with those students in those extra hours. And Kathy Trump did do a remarkable job up at Sioux Valley. And congratulations to all those students and to her. Looking forward to Thursday evening at Trapper Creek Elementary. They're having a guitar and piano recital. So my husband and I will be in Trapper Creek on Thursday evening. And on Saturday, we're both volunteering to work at the Holiday Bazaar at Talkeetna Elementary School. So there are great things happening all over the MATSU for the holidays, and I would like to wish each and every one of you a very happy holiday season and a safe and healthy new year, and we'll see you back in 2014. Thank you.
Member Williams.
Again, just a reminder, our next Student Advisory Board meeting is next Wednesday. It sounds like a lot of you guys are making an effort to come and visit us, and for those of you that have and are planning to have, we love seeing your faces. Coming up in high school world, we have that wonderful holiday of finals week, and after that, we just wish you happy holidays.
All right. I want to encourage people to go to student performances. There's a lot of music happening. There's a lot of singing at elementary schools. And when you do go watch your students, please make sure you thank their teacher. Teachers put in an awful lot of time on these things, and students really enjoy them. So attend a local school music or Christmas celebration. I wanted to wish everybody a Merry Christmas. And with that, we will be moving into executive session. Can I have someone take us out?
I move to go into executive session. I don't have the words to read, but the executive session is for CEA negotiations, MSEA negotiations, and superintendent evaluation.
I'll second it. The matters, knowledge of which would clearly have an adverse effect upon the finances of the government unit. Subjects that tend to prejudice the reputation and character of any person, provided the person may request a public discussion. Matters which by law, municipal charter, or ordinance are required to be confidential. Matters of confidential legal counsel or pending litigation. And the school board and Dr. Paramo, Mr. Fulp, Mr. Stone, and Mr. Friedman, and Ms. Gardner will be in that executive session.
All right, we're in executive session.